Next matter this morning is the Federal Insurance Company versus Executive Coach Luxury Travel. I would note that we have Judge Tim Cannon from the 11th District Court of Appeals joining us in place of Justice Cupp. Counsel. Mr. Smith.
Chief Justice Brown, may it please the court. My name is Steve Smith. I represent the estate of David Betts in this case, one of the appellants. I'm sharing my time with Mr. Jim Yavorsik, who represents one of the other appellants. I'd like to reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal, and Mr. Yavorsik will handle rebuttal. Appellants in this case, Your Honors, are asking you to reverse the Court of Appeals on the basis of over 90 years of clear precedent from this court. We're asking you to uphold the rule of law that says the best intention of the parties to a contract is the words and phrases those parties have chosen, and that when there's an undefined term to a contract or an insurance policy, those undefined terms are given the plain and ordinary meaning. We're asking this court to uphold the tradition that a court will not rewrite a contract or an insurance policy adding conditions or terms and phrases that do not appear in the insurance policy. In this case, it's the insurers that are asking you to abandon this longstanding precedent. And what I've quoted to you is from the very beginning of several cases we've had in our brief, including the Westfield versus Galatas. But it's the insurers that are asking you to add language that doesn't appear in the policy, conditions, and uncertain terms or standards to apply to words that have plain, clear, ordinary meanings. This court knows that the insurers control every comma and period of an insurance policy. This court knows that the cases cited supporting the plain meaning of undefined terms go back to 1917, that when this policy form was written in 2000, that everybody in Ohio knew the standards which would be applied to this policy, and that was the plain meaning. And in this situation, we're talking about the plain meaning of the words hire and the plain meaning of the words permission. Now, I want to make it very clear that the insurers have analogized or proposed to the court that reversing and ruling in favor of the coaches and students on the bus, that the bus driver wasn't insured, would open some kind of floodgates, would lead to a Scott Ponser type of a situation. We know that there was much criticism of the Scott Ponser decision. This is far different. Scott Ponser dealt with construing an ambiguous term in a contract for or against a certain party. We are not asking this court to construe this provision against the insurance company or in favor of Bluffton or in favor of any of the appellants. We're asking the court solely to apply the plain meaning of the terms hire and permission.
Counsel, what you basically want this court to do is to define these terms and then remand it to the trial court for proceedings.
For proceedings. It would be a reversal. This was initiated as a declaratory judgment action, but yes, define the terms. And when I say define the terms, apply. These terms are defined in several cases. The word hire was defined by the court in Montgomery County, the Court of Appeals, given the plain and ordinary meaning. Mm-hmm. It means we've cited several dictionaries to obtain the use of a piece of property for compensation or a fee. You apply that meaning, and of course, Bluffton obtained the use of this charter bus. So, yes, Your Honor.
Mr. Smith, the question you're giving us, the way you have it phrased, is a legal question. Am I correct about that?
I believe so, yes.
All right. And the matter has been presented to us through the trial court and the appellate court on summary judgment.
Correct.
So we're not concerned with facts at issue. We're concerned with the legal definition of hire and permission.
It's understood that if you apply those legal definitions that we advocate, the driver in this situation would be covered.
Yes.
The insurers are advocating some kind of control standard possession.
They'll tell us
standard.
Exactly what they're advocating. I'm going to find out from you. In this instance, as I think about the contract that was entered into between Bluffton and Executive Services, it's your view that they have hired the bus?
Correct. Bluffton has hired the bus.
And is it different if they had simply said, we would like to rent a bus for this trip, and we will have our own college personnel operate it, and when we get back, we will return it to you? Would you see a difference between what happened here, where the contract was entered into with Executive Services, and then the coach was actually obtained, and the drivers were supplied, and the gasoline and the oil and all the rest of that were paid for as part of that contract, as opposed to merely renting a vehicle and having the university provide the personnel and the expense cost for that rental, and then at the end of the trip, returning the vehicle to the rental agency?
The legal result is the same. Of course, the factual circumstances you've described are different, but in both cases, the university has obtained the use of that vehicle and is obviously using it with the permission of Executive Coach, but is also giving permission either its own employee or, in this case, actual permission was given to this driver to drive. Executive Coach called the baseball coach and specifically asked, as you might expect, since the driver was going to spend a whole week in Florida with the team, and ask, is it all right for Mr. Niemeyer to be your driver? The coach said yes. The coach, baseball coach, Coach Grandy, said yes. He gave actual permission in this case. So there could be that circumstance. That would be a hired auto, and the university could give permission to several people to drive in Your Honor's example. But the legal result is no different. And that's a very reasonable legal result. Let me assure you that Bluffton, when it purchased this coverage, purchased the broadest coverage possible. This is anyone else driving any auto. And the court is well aware, you buy insurance for unknown risks. You don't go back in time and buy insurance after the fact on a case-by-case basis.
Are you familiar with the Toops case?
The Toops case, yes, I am, Your Honor.
I was persuaded in our research on that because in Toops, in order for a vehicle to constitute a hired auto, it must be under the named insured's exclusive use or control. And the court there determined that the vehicle was incidental to a service contract and therefore not hired when the policyholder did not furnish the gas, oil, maintenance, driver selection or route, and is interested only in the result of the vehicle transportation. And that was the contrast I was trying to draw between the two scenarios or situations that I wanted you to comment on, because I'm persuaded by the Toops case, and I wonder if you could expound on that or tell me why you think we shouldn't follow that in this case.
Well, number one, it deviates from this court's clear rule of applying the plain meaning to undefined terms.
But we have a term that's not defined, and we have a court that has defined it in a particular situation, which appears, in my view at least, to be analogous to this.
It's not analogous because I believe in the Toops case you had several different layers. And I would caution the court to look at these the case law that's been cited. Almost all the
cases, looking at it.
Almost all the cases are a hauling case or where a contractor hires a subcontractor who hires another subcontractor who hires a couple trucks who then they hire drivers. And that's far different when we have the direct relationship between Bluffton University and Executive Coach to hire this bus. And we're charged for the bus, and it did come with the driver, but in what circumstance? Of course, Hertz and Avis maintain the vehicles that they rent to people. The point is you would nullify hired auto coverage in this kind of omnibus clause if you adopt some kind of artificial standard outside the policy.
Counsel,
I think the Toops case.
What would be an example of another way to hire a vehicle?
I don't know of another way to hire a vehicle other than the contract with the owner, the possessor, the person, and pay a fee. I mean, that's what you do at the desk at Hertz, and we know that this
does it make a difference that there was a hired driver as opposed to, say, the coach driving the vehicle?
It's a factual difference, no legal difference. Mm-hmm. You still have to decide, did they give that hired driver permission? In this case, of course, you needed a commercial license. But
and there's the element of exclusivity of use here?
The record is clear that for the trip, Bluffton has the exclusive use. That is emphasized by the fact that Executive Coach asked the Bluffton whether Mrs. Niemeyer could go along with the trip. No one else could go, whether it was the bus driver's wife or the fifth cousin or Hank Aaron. Bluffton had control over who used it for the week. We could have sat the bus in the parking lot. We had exclusive use of the bus for that week. And so if you get into the possession and control standards that are not in the policy, and quite frankly, Your Honor knows that the insurer could have put in an exclusion for a vehicle hired with a driver, could have done that. But chose not
There's a presumption, I would read it as, that if you are going to cover hired vehicles, it anticipates that you're going to cover vehicles that are not owned by Bluffton.
Right.
But that has to mean vehicles that are owned by a third party. Hired does not denote that you've got an ownership in the vehicle.
Exactly, right.
And Mr. Smith, with the broad reading of the policy that you're advocating here, the fact that the driver, who is driving the vehicle, is not really that important because it's the rental of the conveyance that we're talking about.
Exactly.
Correct.
Correct.
Okay.
Well, I see my time.
Thank
is
you,
up.
Mr. Smith.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Mr. Travis.
Chief Justice Brown, may it please the Court, I'm John Travis, representing Federal Insurance Company. Also present is Mr. Daniel Graham on behalf of American Alternative Insurance Corporation, or AAIC. The issue in this case is whether a transportation...
Is this strictly a legal issue, or is it heavily dependent on the facts? Because they cite facts about who said who could drive and what the coach said, and then you cite some facts that appear to put a very different spin on it. Do we really have just a legal issue, or we have an issue that really depends on facts?
Justice Stratton, it's a legal issue. We're interpreting the policy of insurance. There's no dispute about what happened. Neither side has raised a genuine issue of material fact. It's a declaratory judgment in which the court can look at the facts, and we all agree what happened and make a determination of law. The issue in this case is whether a transportation service provider and its driver are entitled to liability coverage under their customer's policy of insurance. The Court's aware of the issues regarding permission and hiring, and I'm going to propose a rule of law in two paragraphs. Number one, the omnibus clause in a commercial auto policy providing coverage for anyone while using the named insured's permission, a covered auto the named insured owns, hires, or borrows, does not extend liability coverage to a transportation service provider and its driver where the service provider does not relinquish possession and control of the auto to the customer / named insured.
Okay. Let's just stop there. So control, you maintain, was retained by the owner of the bus.
Yes, Your Honor.
Or the
executive who leased the bus from another entity.
So had they not gone off the ramp in Atlanta, when they got to Florida, and the coach says, we're going to this ballpark, and when the game's over, does the driver decide whether we're going to Bob Evans or Wendy's, or does the coach decide that?
The coach could decide that, but that's just
well. And throughout the travels, wouldn't the coach be determining where you're going next and on what highway and all of that?
Not necessarily on what highway, but the coach would certainly direct the driver. But Combs v. Black teaches that mere directions as to delivery or pickup do not constitute control within the meaning of the omnibus clause. I think one of the key issues here is that the clause requires permission. And what the interveners are advocating and suggesting is that Bluffton gave the executive driver permission to drive the executive bus. Well, the facts are clear that at all times, executive and the driver maintained possession and control. And the case law, including Buckeye v. Royal, Combs v. Black, Davis v. Continental, all point out that permission means possession and control.
Okay. Possession, but you lop in control to mean something different than I think it means in the common usage. It would seem to me start times, everything about the trip is going to be controlled by the coach in terms of the movement of the bus. The coach may not tell the driver which filling station to fill it up at, but other than that, everything about this trip is really going to be driven by the coach's instructions. And when you look at the contract here, it doesn't help much to resolve this. The contract is really bare bones in terms of determining the legal issue that you say is the only thing to be determined.
I think that Coach Grandy was interested in the result. He said in his deposition he's interested in safe and timely transportation. He has no control over the methods and means. That was always reposed in executive coach, which is what you would expect because they're an independent contractor responsible for the methods and means. And what the interveners are suggesting is that Bluffton's policy, which was purchased to protect Bluffton, should be extended to provide liability coverage
over third
parties.
Let's go back to the beginning of the trip. They had to, switch buses or do repairs because the coach said, we're not traveling on this bus that doesn't have certain entertainment hookups for the players.
It was the DVD player, which was not functioning. Okay. What happened
isn't that exercise of control by the coach rather than the bus company?
He complained about it. The driver called executive. The driver turned the bus around.
It wasn't the driver's decision to that there was a problem with the DVD, and that was unacceptable to the coach and Bluffton. That was something where the coach indicated this is unacceptable and we need to have it fixed before we start on this journey.
And the driver agreed. But Coach Grandy could not get behind the wheel and drive that bus.
Is that what you're saying that is the definition of a control? Because, you know, hire anticipates non-ownership by the policy owner, non-ownership of the vehicle by the policy owner. Would you agree with that statement?
I do.
All right. So What's an example of a hire that you would say would be covered by the policies here?
If Coach Grandy went to Hertz or Avis and rented a vehicle and he was going to drive it down to Florida, that's a hired vehicle, and that's what the case law indicates is intended to be covered by this omnibus clause, as Justice O'Donnell indicated.
Where does it say that it has to be an employee of Bluffton driving the vehicle?
The cases have interpreted your question, Your Honor, if I understand it, was an example of a hired auto situation.
But you're saying that it has to be an employee of Bluffton that is driving a vehicle that is rented, in other words, a non-owned vehicle that I'm presuming they have to give consideration for its usage.
Doesn't necessarily have to be Bluffton driving the vehicle, but someone has to maintain possession and control. You can't have two people in possession and control of the bus. Somebody's got to make the call. And here, it was Executive Coach at all times that maintained possession and control because they were responsible for the methods and means. And I might add that another reason why it doesn't make sense to extend this liability coverage to Executive Coach and their drivers, they're independent contractors for which Bluffton is not liable. No one has argued anywhere that Bluffton has liability for the torts of Executive Coach
or
the driver.
Now, I asked for an example, and you gave me the example of a covered situation would be if they rented this vehicle and the coach was driving it. Let's say the coach isn't driving it. Give me another example.
Suppose, for example, on this trip, the executive said, Coach Grandy, the driver's yours. You tell him whatever you want to do. Forget our policies. Forget calling back to the home base. He's a lone servant, and he's yours. And then Coach Grandy has effective possession and control over that vehicle. But, of course, that's not what happened here.
So what were the exact responsibilities of the driver that would negate the ability of the coach to be the superior, entity here, the person that's calling the shots, that's saying, this is where we stop, this is — What negates that?
He's an employee of Executive Coach.
But what sort of example of why he was not under the control of the coach?
Because the driver was subject to the direction of his employer, and as an independent contractor, the customer doesn't have the right to control the methods and means.
What did he do that along this route that would indicate that he was not under the exclusive control of the coach?
Well, his trip was short-lived. He got in Adairsville, Georgia, and then the accident happened in Atlanta, and I don't think the record addresses specifically what happened other than he was driving and drove off the ramp.
Mr. Travis, if we could go back to the policy language itself. When you talked about your first proposition and you added the words, where they do not relinquish control, is that language actually in the policy itself, in the insuring clause?
It is not, Justice Sotomayor.
So you're adding language to the policy that's not there, that hasn't been agreed to by the parties.
I would suggest we're not adding language, but we are looking to the courts who have defined what permission means. And it only makes sense that you can't grant permission for someone else to use a vehicle without possession and control.
But the language of the policy, it talks about the vehicle that is, whether you hire or borrow a vehicle. The words hire, the word borrow, are they ambiguous terms in your view? Is that what you're trying to argue to us?
Not at all, Your Honor. The courts have interpreted what hire means, what borrow means, and it's virtually impossible to define every word in a policy of insurance. Look at the plain and ordinary meaning.
And when courts are interpreting, they're looking at specific facts and applying, the law to facts or defining according to the facts before them. But the plain ordinary words of the policy, borrow and hire, I mean, you mentioned hiring could be like renting at Avis where you get behind the wheel, but you can also hire the vehicle along with the driver, can't you? I mean, that's within the common sense of the term hire.
Well, I don't believe that's a reasonable interpretation, and here's why. We agree that a definition of hire is one cited by the interveners to get the use of a thing or the services of another. It's an or situation. Here, because the omnibus clause refers to hiring an auto, that's the use of a thing. And that's where the courts have drawn this line referenced by Justice O'Donnell in the Toops case and other cases. There is a difference between Coach Grandy driving the bus, for which Bluffton can be liable, and going to an independent contractor who has its own insurance and for whom Bluffton cannot be liable.
What if the coach and two or three of the team members in Florida hail a cab and jump into it? Is that hired, a hired vehicle?
No.
It's not?
No. If I get in a cab after I leave the Supreme Court of Ohio and tell the cab driver, well, let's go to Starbucks and get a coffee and let's go to my hotel, I have not hired it. Otherwise, the implication is my firm's commercial auto policy is going to be insuring that taxi cab driver. That's not a reasonable interpretation.
No. The question is, if the cab driver is in a wreck,
right,
are you protected under your policy?
That's right. Would the liability policy of my firm extend to cover him? And according to the intervener, since I'm giving directions and have some control over it, he's an insured under the omnibus clause. We don't believe that's a reasonable interpretation.
Mr. Travis, it seems to me there are two questions in this case. The first one is the definition of the word hire as it's used in the policy, and the second one is the definition of the term permission as it's used in the policy. Do you agree with
Your
that?
Honor, absolutely.
What is your opinion as to whether or not Bluffton hired this bus? Did they hire it or did they not hire it?
Did not hire this bus.
Your first position is that they did not hire it.
Correct.
And for the example that you were responding with respect to Justice Pfeiffer's question about the cab.
Exactly right.
What about the permission? Is there any suggestion that Bluffton gave permission to Mr. Niemeyer or any of the other drivers to drive this bus?
The record reflects that, and as Mr. Smith aptly commented, as you would expect, executive asked Coach Grandy of Bluffton, is Mr. Niemeyer all right as a driver?
And did they
Coach
ask Grandy about
says,
the other two
okay.
drivers? Did they ask about the other two drivers?
No. But giving acquiescence for someone to be a driver is not the same as having possession and control of the vehicle. And the courts, including Combs versus Black, the Davis versus Continental case, and the Buckeye versus Royal case, all have said you need an element of possession and control. That only makes sense because insurance policies.
What is your strongest permission case that I could look to as an example of when I could determine that permission has been granted, as opposed to what you're saying are the facts in this case?
There are very few cases where permission has been granted with respect to an independent contractor because there's no reason to extend the liability coverage of the customer to the independent contractor.
So the question of permission, when does it arise and where has it been defined and found to be applicable?
Permission has been defined by the courts in this state in the Buckeye versus Royal case, in Combs versus Black, and Davis versus Continental out of the three cases that describe it. Those are Ohio cases. They're not foreign cases. And again, I'd like to emphasize that it only makes sense to have some element of possession and control in order to give permission. How do you give permission for someone to use a vehicle without possession and control? And think of what they're asking in this case. They're saying that it was Bluffton who gave the executive driver permission to drive the executive bus.
Counsel, you started off with two paragraphs you wanted to give us that
yes.
sum up your definition. I'd like to hear those since we interrupted you numerous times. And
thank you so
heard
much.
Them.
The second proposition of law, if you will, or rule of law is an auto is not hired by the named insured within the meaning of such an omnibus clause where the named insured contracts with a transportation service provider that furnishes both the auto and the driver.
Thank you.
And if I may conclude, the interveners have also made the argument that Bluffton would want to protect its students, and that's why we should find liability coverage here for executive and its driver. That mischaracterizes the issue. The question is, does the liability coverage of Bluffton's policy purchased by Bluffton to protect it extend to an independent contractor? Courts do not look at the class of plaintiffs to decide whether someone is entitled to liability coverage under a policy of insurance. It just happenstance that this was a single vehicle accident where the students were injured. If the interveners are right, any class of plaintiffs, not just students, could pursue claims against Bluffton's policy, which would deplete or erode Bluffton's limits and would only result in a poorer loss experience, which could lead to increased premiums, which is what Cook v. Cozell says should not happen in this.
Although, Mr. Travis, all of these suggestions that you have about narrowing the policy could also have been written into the policy to make it clear that this would not apply in a situation like this, correct?
Certainly policies can always be rewritten, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Travis.
Thank you.
Mr. Yavorsik.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court. My name is James Yavorsik. I represent Tim Burda and will offer rebuttal on behalf of the appellants. The Court has very astutely characterize this case as being the definition of two key words in the policy, being hire and permission.
How do you distinguish the example given by Justice Pfeiffer of a taxi? You get in a taxi, you obviously are approving the driver because you get in the taxi with that particular driver and you're telling that person exactly where to go. How is that distinguished?
That is a situation where the question is going to be, did the named insured, are you talking about in the Bluffton case or in a hypothetical situation where just an owner, if an ordinary owner would get in a taxi, the taxi cab would get in a wreck, yes, that would be a hired auto, but it wouldn't probably be a covered auto. That's the point that has to be made here. One of the keys to this case that's been overlooked by the insurance carriers is that the covered autos in this case are any auto, whereas in most family policies and, in fact, even most business policies, the coverage is going to be limited to a specified listing of vehicles. So we wouldn't even get to the issue of coverage under those terms because it would not be a covered auto.
Mr. Yavorsik, if I understand what you're saying is that the example, the hypothetical given by Justice Pfeiffer of the hiring of a taxi cab, that you would agree that the definition of hire does encompass that situation.
Yes, Your Honor.
But there's no coverage because it's not a covered vehicle.
Exactly.
But when we're talking in this case about the definition of the word hire, you believe that both the executive coach is included and the taxi cab would likewise be included.
Right. Okay. And on an excess basis. Mm-hmm. That's another important point to make is that this is not first dollar coverage. It would only come into play, pursuant to the terms of the Hartford policy at issue here, on an excess basis for vehicles not owned by Bluffton. By claiming that Bluffton University did not hire the bus but rather contracted for transportation services, the appellees are asking this court to protect themselves from their own words. If the term hired auto did not include a vehicle with a driver, that clause should have been in the definitions itself. And furthermore, the policy does not say a covered vehicle you own, borrow, or control. It says a covered vehicle that you, meaning Bluffton, own, borrow, or hire. Likewise, with regard to the issue of permission, there is nothing in the policy that says that the permission must solely be from Bluffton University. The policy is silent on this point. If counsel for appellant prevails, basically this court would have to rewrite the policy to say any other person operating a hired auto with the sole permission of the named insured. It doesn't say that. And that's not the job of this court to rewrite the policy language. Clearly, there is evidence in this case of numerous instances of Bluffton University providing control shared control over this vehicle during this week, even to the extent that Executive Coach had to ask Bluffton University's permission if Mr. Niemeyer's wife could accompany them on the trip. That's an example of control. The DVD incident is another example of control. And the record is replete with testimony not only from Coach Grandy, but also from the two owners of Executive Coach that they gave Bluffton control of the vehicle during this week.
Thank you, Mr. Yavorsik.
Thank you, Your Honor.